Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just so broke, you won't believe. Can't get a dollar out of me. And as far as I can see, I'm losing control like a bad disease. No, I just can't get relief. I've been shot down by the life police. Cause every day I try to rise, but I can't succeed. Can anybody find a cure for me? You can be bitter, bitter, bitter. Or you can be better, better, better. When life gives you lemons, lemons. Instead of champagne, don't worry, little children, and don't complain. Whoa, remember your golden, the bite of sugar cane. When life gives you lemon, take lemonade.
Hama, 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 hey, hama, hama. Hama, 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 hey, hama, hama. Hama, 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 hey, hama, hama. Hama, 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 hama.
Now every day is like a brand new year. I throw my hands up in the air like I just don't care. I'm moonwalking down the street feeling like, oh yeah,
oh yeah.
But like the bottom of the gas, now I see clear. So now I laugh just a little more. I'm getting much taller than I did before. I know I'm not where I need to be, but I thank God that I'm not where I used to be. I used to be bitter, bitter, bitter. And now I feel better, better, better. Well, life gives you lemon. Champagne. Don't worry, little children, and don't complain. Whoa, remember your golden, your bite of sugar cane. When life gives you lemon, take lemonade.
Hama, 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 hama.
I would say for a reason that I can't explain. Got something new to believe in. I'm awakened again.
I'm a man of many talents. I'm more talented than Alex Boyer. More people ask for my autograph than for him. They're not going to tell you that. That little, like, rap part, where we're like, lemonade, so dumb. It's already been done, like, a billion times. But luckily I was in the shot, because I saved it. Redemption. You're welcome, Alex.
Life Gives You Lemons, Mick Martini's show, is a show for the tame and the untamed. It's serious with a dash of humor. Life is what you make it. You may be rich but unhappy, or broke and happy. You may have had many adversities in your life. How many pity parties did you have? Ever went from being a victim to becoming victorious? Ever been down so low you can swing your legs on a dime? Do you have a sense of humor? Ever laughed at yourself? What is your overall view of life? Want to vent or just have something to get off your chest? If you answered yes to one of these questions, this show is for you. On my show, you'll get free exposure. If you're a business owner starting a business, author, expert, or just want to share information of importance, I invite you to come on as a guest and let's chop it up. Sorry, there will be no discussion, religion, or politics. If you're interested in being a co-host or a guest, you may email me at gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Again, that's gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Good evening, everybody. This is Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious, your host for this evening. And today's topic is dysfunction in the family. Now, I'm not trying to say that this is in every family, because I'm quite sure there are some loving families out there that get along without all the strife and bitterness and anger and jealousy and envy and everything that goes on in some of these families that are just plain downright dysfunctional. And I come from a dysfunctional family. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom was depressed a lot. And my siblings were bitter, you know, just growing up. But as we got older, we sort of like came together and ironed out a lot of things, you know, because when you're young, you have fights with your brothers, you have fights with your sisters, misunderstandings. And when you get older, you can, you know, iron these things out by talking or, you know, agreeing on different things that when you were young, you had no idea how to even approach situations that you were in. But then when it gets to a point where there's death in the family, my father died. He's been dead for over 45 years. And when he died, that's the first time I ever experienced someone close to me dying and being able to understand the death and missing someone when they're gone. Now, I had a brother who died when I was 9 years old, and he was 6 years old. But at that particular time in my life, I didn't really understand what death was, you know. But when my mom said that he had passed on, I just, you know, I think I said, well, where is he? You know, but anyway, getting back to the fact of when you get older, you understand these things. I think I was like in my 20s when my dad passed. And I was a daddy's girl. You know, like I said, I have two older sisters, two older brothers, and I had three younger brothers. Two of my brothers are deceased. I still have my baby brother, my two older brothers, and my two older sisters. Now, when growing up in a household with, it was five of us at that particular time. It was my two sisters, my oldest brother, me, and my baby brother. When I was the baby, things were like, you know, kind of good. But when my baby brother came along, things weren't that good anymore, because he was a baby. He got all the attention. And I felt, you know, like, hey, this new baby's in the house. He's taking up all the attention and whatever. But managed to get along with him. I was basically his, the one that was always, he was always tagging along with me. We're 7 years apart, and I had basically, you know, had to do things for him, like taking him to different little functions, little birthday parties, and little events that we had at the church, and, you know, different things like that. And over the years, you know, when I was young, I could say that I really was envious of him because of all the, well, all of us was envious of him because he got the most attention. And when you direct all your attention to one child and there are other children in the family, that's kind of like you can feel the difference, and it makes you feel different. So I was feeling some type of way. But anyway, we all grew up in the same household, mom and dad, my father, my two sisters. Well, they have a different father, and but they only, my father was one who raised them, because their father had went to jail for drugs or something. I don't really remember or know, but this is what I was told. And, you know, my father was their dad because they called him Daddy, and he took care of us. Okay, well, my father died. Me and my mom, we used to always go through different things, you know, because I really wanted to. I felt like I was the black sheep of the family, not being able to do things that I wanted to do, thinking I was grown and, you know, wanting always to do what I wanted to do, but I wasn't really thinking at that particular time the repercussions it was going to have on my life later on. So we were, like, bumping heads a lot. And, you know, when my mom died, she died in 1995, it seemed like the family just fell apart. You know, because we used to have Christmas, we used to have Christmases together, Thanksgiving, you know, the different holidays. And after, you know, like my mom died, everything just went south. You know, everybody went their separate ways, and it was no more gatherings. And, well, let me back that up. It was a few gatherings after that, but then after a while, things just, everybody just went their separate ways, and, you know, there was no functioning like we did before my mom was alive. And when my mom died was when my oldest sister really went into her thing. I can't even really describe how she is, but she has a very nasty attitude towards people, towards life, towards herself. You know, she just has this really bad attitude, like somebody owes her something. You know, if you can't do for her, then she doesn't want to be bothered with you. You have to always be given to her. You know, when, not to say that she hasn't given as well, but when it comes down, you're giving from somebody else's pocket, that's almost as if you're not really giving yourself. But needless to say, she, you know, she did distribute different things in the family at one point in her life. But if she became angry with you or you did something that she didn't like, OMG. That is when that little demon comes out. Now, I'm going to try to make this story as short as possible because I'm only on here for an hour. But my sister stopped speaking to me at one point after my mom had died because I didn't even know she wasn't speaking to me. This is just how she does things. She'll stop speaking to you and, you know, just ignoring you and acting really childish and immature as far as I'm concerned, because two grown women should be able to talk and discuss things that are ailing them, you know, that makes you feel something about a certain person. You need to talk with them and get it out on the table and, you know, come to an agreement or disagreement or something. You just need to come together and have that communication so things won't go south. But they had already gone south because I didn't, like I said, I didn't know she had stopped speaking to me. And the reason she stopped speaking to me, my other sister told me that it was because of something I had put in my mom's obituary. Mind you, I wrote up the obituary, excuse me, and I let each one of my siblings read it before I sent it to the printer, so that if it was something that needed to be added or something that needed to be deleted, that I could have done it before the obituaries were printed. Okay, everybody agreed to it, even she did. And mind you, I'm the one who did everything for my mom's funeral. Me and my baby brother. My baby brother took me around to the places as far as getting the casket, the funeral home, programs, I'll get my mom's clothes, doing this, doing that. And after it was all over with, you know, I said, OMG, I buried my mom. And I'm the baby girl. So I went into an emotional breakdown. I could not go to work. before I took off 30 days. But it was just like so much for me to bear because, you know, missing my mom and then being the one to bury her and, you know, all this stress I was going through. But, and then the fact of the matter, when my mom was on her deathbed, was the first time I ever heard my mom say, "Love me." So that was something that made me feel good, but then bad because she was dying. You know, it would have been something different if she had told me this throughout my life because I always told my mom I loved her, but she would always say, mm-hmm. And then come to find out, the reason why my mom never said she loved us was because I'm just thinking that maybe was never told to her. Because I understand one of my mother's oldest sister had told my sister told me that when they were coming up, my mother and her sisters and brothers, they were abused by their grandmother badly, and my mother took it the worst. So my mom suffered from depression and, you know, all this emotional trauma that she was going through. And I know that my mom loved me looking back on things, but, you know, like I said, we bumped heads, and I wanted to be grown, wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And so I went through different changes in my life, going to a boarding school, being in a juvenile detention center, you know, living on the streets, sleeping in vestibules, sleeping in laundry mats and, you know, different things like that to survive, sleeping in abandoned cars because my mom would either put me out or I'd run away, you know. And looking back on my life, you know, all those changes and things I set my mom through, I'm very glad to know that when she told me she loved me, it was so sincere. And all I could do was cry. But I didn't let my mom see me cry because she was already going through her trauma because my mom died from cancer. And to see my mom in that state was really heartbreaking because my mom has always been a very strong, independent woman. My mom never complained about pain. You know, she was just strong, and she had many talents, very important talents. I remember growing up, my mom used to cut all the boys' hair in the neighborhood, you know, line be out the door, and she could sew, and she was a tailor, a seamstress, a ceramic maker. You know, it just was so many things that my mom could do, and she did. And, you know, like a jack of all trades, she mastered all of them. So, you know, to hear my mom when she said she loved me on her deathbed was a good thing. It was definitely a good thing because, you know, like I said, we had bumped heads growing up, when I was growing up. Now, my oldest sister, she basically was bouncing around from family member to family member. She also was in a juvenile detention center as well, but she was so bullheaded and stubborn, you know, because every family member that she ever went to stay with ended up putting her out because she wanted to do what she wanted to do. And I remember the last time when we were all at home, my mom had went to Atlantic City this particular year. And my sister was in charge. She had parties every day, men over drinking beer and, you know, just having a good time when my mom was gone. She put me out, and I don't know if she put my brother out, but she put me out. When my mom came back home, my mom was gone a couple of weeks. My mom came back home. I told my mom what had happened. My mother told her, "You get out." My sister told my mother, "I'm not going anywhere." My mother said, "Oh, yes, you are. So she called the police. The police came. The police asked her, well, how old are you? I think she was like 21. So the police said, well, ma'am, you got to go. You're not, you know, you're an adult. And at that particular time, they, you know, escorted her out. And she was gone from that point. And I don't know if her and my mom has spoken in those years, but like I said, she was 21. I was like 6 years younger, so that made me, I don't know, maybe about, well, I was 6 years younger than her, and she was 21. Now, mind you, she did have a daughter who she bounced around from pillar to post as well, because she really wasn't ready to even become a mother when she did. So her daughter was living here, living there, living this place, that place. Her daughter even came and stayed with me at one point in life. Mind you, I'm only 11 years older than her daughter. So my sister has had this chip on her shoulder for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because of something that happened in her life or somebody did something or said something to her, but she's just been carrying this chip on her shoulder for as long as I can remember. Sometimes she would be the nicest person on the earth, then other times she's so mean, nasty, and ornery till it's pathetic. It's hard to believe that someone could go from 0 to 100 the way she does when she changes, like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So anyway, like I said, the first time she stopped speaking to me was when my mother died in 1995. We didn't speak until 1999 or something like that, when my son had and his wife had their second child, because my son lost his wife. And the baby was, like, born in November, and his wife died in January. And he was working, and I didn't really want the baby to just go stay with anybody. So I called my sister and asked her, would she take care of the baby? And I sort of regret that I did that, but then again, I don't regret it because my grandbaby was with a family member. But the fact of the matter, my sister is so, she screams. She doesn't talk. She screams out demands and hollers and, you know, just the way she treated my grandbaby to me really hurt me. Because my grandbaby, even though she never knew her mom, but it was like, you don't treat a child the way you treat her, because number one, she's not your child. You are her great aunt, but you treat her just like, it was just, sometimes she was nice to her, and sometimes she was so, so, so mean to my grandbaby. And it was times when she would come to my house and my granddaughter asked me for something. She tell her, no, you can't have it. How you going to tell my granddaughter that she can't have something that she asked me for in my house? So one time I had to tell her, Joanne, you can't tell me what to do in my house when my granddaughter's here. I said, when she's at your house, I don't tell you what to do with her. So when she's at my house, don't tell me what to do with her. If she wants something, I'm going to give it to her. Simple as that. So she got an attitude. Now, what is that to get an attitude about? I didn't come to her house and tell her, well, don't do this, you can't do that, whatever, whatever. Have that much respect for me when I respect you when she's at your house. But my sister, she wants that control. So I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to try to not make this a long, drawn-out story. But anyway, we go through that, and as my, she kept my grandbaby, I think, till she was maybe about three or four, something like that. In the meantime, my son had another girlfriend, and, well, eventually they did get married, but this is a woman that I really did not care for because of the way she treated my granddaughters. She had a daughter, and she treated her daughter exceptionally well, which she should have, but if she was going to have my son, and knowing my son had two daughters, she had, should have treated my daughter just exceptionally well as she did her own daughter. They were a package. It wasn't like you could be with my son and his daughters, you know, whatever. It doesn't work like that. But that's how she presented things. So I really didn't care for her. And my granddaughter was, you know, telling things that had happened to her through the things that my son's girlfriend at that particular time was doing to her, saying to her how she was treating her and this and that. So my sister had gotten an attitude. She said, I don't want that girl around me. I'll this, that, whatever. I'll break my foot off in her. You know, all these crazy things she was saying. And I was feeling basically the same way, but I kept it to the point of I really didn't want to even say anything about it. I did want to say something to the girl about how she treated my grandbaby, but my grandbaby didn't want that to be said because of the simple fact they would, you know, it would be repercussions behind it. So I couldn't say anything to her or to my son about the things that, you know, my the girl had did to my grandbaby. So fast forward really quick, in 2014, my sister, my daughter and my son, we were all at my cousin's house, Nancy, may she rest in peace, Nancy's house, who cooked every Sunday. She fixed food every Sunday, and any and everybody came through that door could get a plate of food. If you came to my cousin Nancy's house as a stranger, trust and believe, you left as a friend. And I love Nancy for that. She was such a beautiful soul. So this particular Christmas in 2014, I'm sorry, we were all up there, you know, having a good time, you know. My sister's an alcoholic, too. She's alcoholic. You know, everybody's doing whatever they want to do, watching television, talking, laughing, you know, just having a good family time. So my grandson was there as well. That's my daughter's, my oldest grandson was there. And they were, like, you know, joking around with my sister, you know, playing, you know, taking a drink and whatever, whatever. And she was drunk about this particular time. You know, when you get drunk, you get that courage. So all of a sudden she got up and went into the living room, and I heard all this commotion. I didn't know what was going on. So by the time I got in there, my son was getting up off the floor. And I'm saying, what in the world happened? You know, so she's huffing and puffing like a bull. I'll do this. Nah, 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 nah. So I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, hold up. So I set my son down, and I sat on his lap, and, you know, just was holding it. So he was laughing, you know, like whatever. But she was going crazy. So finally we, you know, got her outside, and she's woofing and saying this, I'm going to do this to his truck and this. That's why I don't like that bee he whiffing this and that and, you know, just going cuckoo. So finally calmed her down. I took her home. And she was saying, you know, I don't appreciate this. I don't appreciate that. But my thing is this. When I found out the next day that she had actually choked my son. That's why he fell out the chair. And there could have been some serious accidents, some serious injuries caused by what she did. But luckily, she didn't get hurt. because it was a glass door right next, glass patio door right next to where my son was sitting, a glass table. You know, he could have hit his head or she could have hit her head. It could have turned out worse than what it did. And luckily, my son is the type of guy that he respected her. He didn't, you know, put his hands on her or say anything back to her or anything. He just was, like, laughing it off. But when I found out she had choked him, I was livid. Because, number one, that's my child. I don't care if he's 100 years old. He is my child, and you don't have the right to put your hands on him for any reason, especially if he didn't put his hands on you. And my son would never have done that to her. So I had to actually pray on the fact of, what am I going to do? You know, so I wrote her a letter. In that letter, I put how I felt, different things about how she made other people feel. I just went right for the jugular. But trust me, everything I put in that letter was the truth about her, how she bullied people, how she manipulated people, how she treated people, how she treated her daughter, her own grandchildren, her great-grandchildren, and she's a great-great-grandmother. You know, just how mean and ornery she was. I told her I didn't appreciate that. I said, I would never put my hands on your child. Never. And her child has done things to me to make me wish, wanted to put my hands on her, but for what? That's not my child. So she gets the letter, reads the letter, and she sends me back this little itty-bitty teeny-tiny note expressing, you're right, I'm sorry, tell Nancy, I'm sorry, tell your son, I'm sorry, tell your daughter, I'm sorry. No, that's not an apology. Number one, why do I have to tell him you're sorry? You had Nancy's phone number. If you didn't, all you had to do was ask me for it. You have Gail's phone number, and you have my son's phone number. So all you had to do was to call them and tell them that you're sorry, okay? But she didn't. She tells me to tell them. That's not a sincere apology. And why are you telling me to tell them? I'm not responsible for telling them something that you did that you're sorry for. That's your responsibility. Okay, so by and by, that happened in December. Her birthday is in June. And I also put in the letter that, you know, we can, I'll never take you back to my cousin's house. I don't want you around my son anymore. You know, but we still sometime maybe can hang out, you know. And I told her that I loved her, you know, but this was just too much at that particular time, what was going on. So I think I called her a few times after that. She didn't answer the phone, so I'm just saying, okay, no problem, not paying attention. So then I called her to wish her a happy birthday. She didn't answer the phone, texting her, calling her. So I asked my grandbaby, hey, you talked to your Auntie Lake? She said, well, she texted me, whatever. So I said, oh, wow. I said, because I've been calling her and, you know, trying to get in touch with her. I don't know what's going on, you know, because I'm not thinking that, you know, she's mad at me, especially after she sent that little itty-bitty teeny-tiny apology. So I said, okay. So by and by, I went through a few changes and had to move in with my other sister. My other sister, OMG, it's really pathetic. And I don't know if it's because of their father's background or, you know, what the problem is with the both of them, but they are basically the same, because I thought my other sister, I thought she was the sweetest person in the world until I moved in with her. That's when you get to know a person. When you live with them, you learn a lot about them. And I moved in with my sister, and it was like living with the devil. So anyway, I remember speaking to my baby brother one day, and he was with my oldest sister. And I said, tell her I said hello, you know, because I hadn't been able to catch her on the phone, or she never answered my texts or anything like that. So he said, okay. So the next day I said, well, what did she say? Do you know that this woman told my brother that I was dead to her? When you say somebody is dead to you, that's a lot of hate that you have to have in your heart for that person. So I felt some type of way about that. I was really hurt because I said, dead to her? I said, wait a minute, what did I do? But then as I began to analyze the situation and talk it over with, you know, different people, the conclusion was the truth that I put in that letter obviously offended her. Because when a person is in a habitual, chronic liar, which she is, they can't handle the truth. So that's what I surmised was going on. Because everything I put in that letter was nothing but the truth. I didn't lie about anything. I didn't say anything different from what I felt in my heart. But she was offended by it. Because I pulled her cards. And see, she couldn't stand that. She couldn't stand the fact of me telling her the truth about herself. And I would have said the same thing to her face. But like I said, she was ignoring my calls and whatever. But that's what the conclusion I come to. She was offended by the truth. And the truth is really supposed to set you free. The truth is nothing wrong with telling the truth, even though it's quicker and easier to tell a lie. But look at all the repercussions lies cause. People have actually lost their life over someone lying on them. People have actually went through so much trauma in their lives over somebody lying on them until it's not funny. But you know what? She lies because that's what she can do. That's what she does best, is lie. But I just had to get everything off my chest when I had put in that letter to her. And like I said, not anything was a lie that I put in there. Even though she twisted around and said that I said this and I said that, but I had proof of what I said because I still have the letter. So she can still, like I said, she's an habitual liar. And she actually lies so much until I think she believes her lies. And when a person believes their own lies, that's sad. Because there's nothing that you can do that can convince them that they're lying. Because they believe that they're telling the truth. They believe it's the truth in their own head. But they know. They know deep down inside it's a lie, but they believe it. So that's where, you know, she was offended because I told the truth. So I'm dead to her. But you know what? In all actuality, she's dead. Not to me, because she's always going to be my sister. But her soul is so dark, so black, so she's just a miserable, unhappy person. That's her problem. She's miserable. She don't love herself. She don't love nobody else. And she's miserable. So you know the old adage, misery loves company? but I will never be her company. Because guess what? I'm a very happy-go-lucky, loving person. I still love my sister. I pray for her, but I do not and I will not be in her presence for nothing. I don't have to be, because number one, it's negative energy, and I don't need any negative energy in my life. I've been through it. I've been through the storm, in the storm, over the storm, under the storm, and I think now in my life, I'm really enjoying peace and happiness. Peace and happiness. Because I refuse to let any type of negativity be in my life. I refuse. So I'm dealing with the fact of my sister being dead to my sister. And my other sister does not speak to me. I didn't know that she wasn't speaking to me until, you know, I mean, they're older than me and they acting like children. You mean to tell me you can't even come to me and say, I'm mad because of this, or I'm upset because of that, or you did this, you did that. You're just going to pout and complain and whine and still lie and, you know, drag my name through the mud. But it's all good because guess what? They are the ones who drank the poison and waiting for me to die. They are the ones who are miserable and going through whatever it is they're going through. Not me. I don't have time for it, and I will never have time for people who are negative. I'm just not going to let that happen to me anymore. It's not going to happen. Not today, not tomorrow, not next year. It's not going to happen, not in my life. Not as long as I know what to do with people who are with people like that. You know, I can still love you, but I don't have to like what you do. And I don't. I don't like the fact that my sister is so bitter. Both of them bitter, mean, angry. For what reason? Let it go. Because all you're doing is stressing yourself out, manifesting illnesses in yourself over the way that you want everybody else to feel. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put myself in misery. Nope. Not for nobody. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show. At 109.9 Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hosted by Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. For questions or comments, the call-in number is 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. And remember, if life gives you lemons, make a martini. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
You say that we're through. It's over between me and you. Fire's gone out, and it's time we both found someone new. Oh, oh, how it hurts to hear you say those words. Now they'll never be another someone for me on this earth. So pull the moon down from the sky. I won't need no moonlight. Oh, no.
Welcome back. That was Ollie Woodson, Turn Out the Stars. That was a beautiful piece. Back to the show. This is your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. I see all you guys in on the switchboard. Don't be afraid to hit the one and, you know, let's talk about it. We have a few minutes left, but if you have a question or comment, just hit the one. But I am glad that you are listening, even if you're not making a comment. How about that? Yeah, so getting back to the dysfunction in the family, like I mentioned earlier, I come from a dysfunctional family, but I'm trying to put all that behind me, you know, because just because I come from a dysfunctional family doesn't mean that I have to be dysfunctional. You know, because I've done a lot of positive things in my life since I moved away. I now live in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and a lot of positive things I've done, you know, just being here. And, you know, I'm happy that I am here because I think this is where I was supposed to be anyway. So, you know, like I said, I've been receiving my blessings, and, you know, after going through all the trials and tribulations I went through just getting here, but, you know, trials and tribulations are inevitable. Misery is optional. And I'd rather go through my trials and tribulations than to choose misery, because guess what? It's just too much for a person to cast misery on themselves the way some people cast misery on themselves, and then they wallow in it, and they want everybody around them to wallow in their misery. But I'm going to tell you a little secret. You don't have to wallow in other people's misery. There's a saying, you can do bad by yourself. So never let anybody pull you down, especially to their level, if they're living a life of misery, a life of despair, a life of anger, a life of hatred, and just all those negative ill feelings that these people are going through. You know, if you know that someone wants you to, you know, wallow in their misery with them, get away from them. Because I'm telling you, it's not good to let somebody pull you down into their level, to their degree of whatever they're going through. If you can help somebody get over misery or whatever, there's nothing wrong with that. But if a person is so stuck miserable, you know, just wallowing in it and wanting everybody to be miserable with them, get away. That's how I'm handling the dysfunction in my family. I love my sisters, but I refuse to let them bring me down to the misery that they are going through. Never. It'll never happen, because I see the repercussions it's causing them. My sister, who is under my oldest sister, she's just a wreck. A wreck. And it's sad to say that, but she brought all this misery on herself. My oldest sister, the same thing. She thinks that the world owes her something. The world don't owe you nothing. Nothing at all. So is she still waiting for a piece of the pie from the world? Keep on waiting, sister. But you know what? My life is beautiful. Beautiful. And I'm getting my blessings. See, people who have all those ill feelings about them, they block their blessings. How can you get full of something that's good when you're so full of bad? You know, you have to let go of the bitterness, the anger, the problems that you're carrying in order to receive your blessings. Because as long as you're full of whatever else you're full of, there's no room for blessings. You just stay right where you are in your little cocoon of bitterness and whatever else you're carrying on. And, you know, you'll see. You may see one day. I just hope and pray that my sisters wake up one day and realize that, you know, hey, you know, even if they don't want to tell me face to face that they're sorry or make an apology to me, but if they just would tell me that they love me and that they are sorry for how they treated me, it would be greatly appreciated. But I'm not going to hold my breath and wait for them to do that, because my life goes on. But I will not stop praying for them, and I will not stop loving them. But right now, I'm not going to let them take me down to their level. And I have a niece who is my sister's youngest, the sister who's under my oldest sister's daughter, the apple don't fall far from the tree. This girl is angry with me over a little teeny tiny old heater. Yeah, and this story, it's really crazy story to tell. You know, it's kind of embarrassing because why is someone mad at me over a heater? But I'm going to tell you this story, and this will be the last story because I'm going to wrap this show up because I know some of you guys may want to go out for the evening or whatever. But me and my niece, we work together. And the office that we work out of is so cold, it feels like you're walking into a freezer. So she had her little heater at work, and she's off on Sunday, and, you know, she's off on Saturday and Monday, and I'm off Saturday and Sunday. So when she went to work that Sunday, no, when I went to work that Friday, the little heater was working. When she went to work that Sunday, the heater was working. When I went to work that Monday, the heater wasn't working, and I told her. So she looked at me, she said, well, you responsible. I said, huh? You responsible? I put that heater in it, bus used, blah, 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 you responsible, this and that. So I said, no, I'm not. All of a sudden, this girl looked like the exorcist was coming up out of her. And I said to myself, wait a minute, hold up. She got to telling me that I was responsible for this and that. I said, look, if I broke your heater, I would be responsible for it. But all I did was plug it in, and it didn't work. So how am I responsible? And like I said, it was a little old heater. You know, so maybe it was on its last leg that Monday. I don't know, but I know this. I'm not responsible for it, and I let her know that. So in the meantime, I brought my little heater in, you know, for us to use because I had really forgotten about it. You know, just that little squat that we had was done, you know. So now she has her butt on her shoulders, not speaking, and we have to communicate on the job. But you know what? I'm still going to love her. I'm still going to communicate with her, but I do not have to be her friend. I'm her aunt. That's it. That's all. And I love her, and I'm going to keep her in prayer. Because you know what? Prayer works. But, you know, just saying that, you know, people in the family, some people, some members, make the family so dysfunctional. Make the family, you know, not what it is. And when my mom died, my sister, my oldest sister, should have became the matriarch. But because she's so full of misery, hatred, and all those other things, she don't even, oh my goodness, the girl is just, you know, it's sad. Her life is really sad. And I feel sorry for her. I really feel bad for her because of the simple fact she's passing up all her blessings. She hasn't done anything with her life. She's just existing. You know, so people who just exist and not living life, it's really sad when there's so many things in life have to offer. Even though we're going through what we're going through with DT in the White House, even though we're going through with him almost starting a war, even though we're going through with the earthquakes, this and that, be grateful and thankful that it's not you. Be grateful and thankful you have a roof over your head. Be grateful and thankful that you have food on your table. Be grateful and thankful that God allowed you to wake up another day. Do they feel that way? Do they really feel that way? But how are you going to say that your sister, who you can see every day, is dead to you, and out that same mouth, you saying you love God, and you telling people have a blessed day, this and that, and you know what? I'm just so grateful and thankful that I'm no longer in that situation. I've been moved to a whole different state away from all that. The dysfunction is still going on. But guess what? I separated myself from it. I separated myself. Because if I didn't, I wouldn't have been where I'm at now. You know, I'd still be wallowing in the misery that they wanted me to be in, you know, going crazy because my sister said I'm dead to her, having those feelings. But, you know, it's all good because I know I'm not dead. God knows I'm not dead. What's most important is that my soul is not dead. You know, and God is the judge of me. No one can tell me my self-worth. No one. Only God. People can talk about me. They can say this. They can say that. They talked about Jesus Christ. They hung him on the cross. And what did he do? He did all that, the love of his creation. And you mean to tell me that I'm dead to you? Well, we've come to the end of the show, Dysfunction in the Family. This is your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, and I appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in this Saturday evening. You could have been anywhere else, but you was right here with me, right here with me, listening to another episode of If Life Gives You Lemon, Make a Martini Show. I do appreciate each and every one of you. And remember, if you're drinking, don't drive. If you're driving, don't drink. I love talking to you, not about you. Love seeing you, not viewing you. With that being said, have a wonderful evening. See you guys here next week. Maybe a different time. I don't know, because I can come on any time I want after 7. But, and like I said, thanks for all you guys in the on the switchboard. And don't be afraid to hit that 1, because I'd love to hear from you guys. I'm quite sure if you're not from a dysfunctional family, maybe you know someone that's from a dysfunctional family. But this is the end of the show. See you guys next week. Love you.
You just listened to the number one radio station on the internet, Delicious Talk Radio. Thank you and good night.